This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. A Jeff Stein sighting will be a little... He is not that mad at me that he's not coming back after last week. It was feisty last week, though. I gotta tell you the truth, I did actually have a lot of people come to me and say, you know, you were right to go after him the way you did. And so, yeah, I don't back down from that. I do not back down. I stand by my criticism of Jeff Stein.
All right. We'll let him know when he comes on.
Don't tell him.
So we're texted, confirmed he is back.
Oh, yeah.
You're on speaking terms.
Oh, yeah. No, he's, you know, well, he didn't like it when I called him out on that. But stop with the Harry Reid had nothing to do with what the Republicans did there. Don't even try to validate what they're doing by bringing up Harry Reid. And like I said, I got a lot of people came back to me and said, I'm glad you went after him because that's just bull. And it is. It's right wing arguments that they put out there that, you know, is just and then they convince themselves it's true. So are you going to the god awfully cold let's freeze in Honduran game tonight over
at, you know, I actually really would like to go, but I am not tonight, though. I'm going to watch it on TV, that's for sure.
Oh, gosh, man. That is poor Honduras. Welcome to Minnesota. Welcome to the party, pal. It's like this every year. Oh, I'm sure that they're going to file a complaint with FIFA or whatever, the World Cup organization, about how dare you allow them to have a game up there in the cold. But, you know, the field – okay, so, I mean, we're talking about this. The field apparently has heating devices that warm it up to 55 degrees. So that's going to be playable. It's not going to be frozen. How much higher off the ground do you think that heat will go?
Probably not much, I'm guessing. It's going to be cold down there.
I actually think it will, because remember, you got the body heat of all the people in the stands. Mm. Okay, that place will be sold out. Oh, it will be.
Oh, it's, for the U.S. national team?
Oh, yeah. That's a small arena. Just over there the other day with the Winter Carnival when we drove past it. It's a great arena. It's gorgeous. And like I said, every other sports team in this town is going to just kick themselves forever and are not building right in the midway. That's just right in the middle of the downtown's perfect location. But I will say, I do know that it does, you know, your bodies do generate some heat. They've said this at Lambeau, that in Lambeau is a much more open stadium than Allianz. And a much bigger stadium, that they say when that stadium is filled, it actually does warm up the playing surface a little bit. Not much, but that because of all the body heat in the stands.
It's kind of enclosed, too, if you haven't been there before. Mm. Yeah, it's not open, as you said, like a Lambeau or other football stadiums.
It's not going to be warm. Those poor Honduran guys.
You know what? This is what I love about FIFA qualification in the region the U.S. is in, is that when the U.S. started beating Mexico, they figured out, oh, yeah, whenever we play them in qualification, let's play them in the middle of winter in a northern city. And they've done that with other Central American teams. And then Mexico does it to us. When they play the U.S., they say, all right, we're going to play at Estadio Azteca in the middle of summer during the day.
Exactly.
In elevation, yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the only – okay, let's put it this way. We are like the death blow city for soccer matches in winter. The only place they could have it that would be worse would be – either Fairbanks, Alaska, or Duluth. Duluth. Who's going to keep running down the hill to get the ball? Dang it. Frank, not over the fence again. Damn it. All right. Someone has to go down and get it.
Well, we have to put a stadium in Embarrass, Minnesota. That place always gets the record cold temp in Minnesota.
Okay. You bring it up. You remember when they lost all the battery testing places? Why not International Falls?
Oh, there you go.
Welcome to the Thunderdome. Although, you have to have a location where you're going to be. And that's, 7 hours from here to International Falls, right? It's 3, 4, maybe 5 hours. 5 hours to International Falls. You just zip up 53 and you're there. Bemidji would be harder. Or like Thief River Falls. But, no, if you were going to do that, you have to make it close enough to where a good crowd could show up. And although I think Fairbanks, Alaska would represent – I mean, let's face it. You're having an international sporting event in Fairbanks. You're going to get everyone from 50 miles coming in. And so you'll fill up that stadium. Duluth does make it easier because then you do actually have a decent drive from Minneapolis. That's, you know, 2+ hours. So easy. Easy peasy, man. You'd fill up this. Oh, gosh. Can you imagine? Imagine a wind coming off Superior at the top of the hill on, say, a good ripe, you know, -4 day. Oh, man. Poor Honduras. They'd be frozen solid. I think half the U.S. team would be frozen solid by that point. I don't think the U.S. would be officially protesting that game. Oh, it's going to be a chilly one. It's got to be sold out. I mean, we're just nuts up here for this stuff. We love outdoor. If they could play an outdoor baseball game, you don't think for 1 second that Target Field would be packed to the rafters?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, the U.S. men's national team always draws well, as do the women. That's sold out.
Well, the women sold out the U.S. Bank, didn't they? Didn't they? Was that that? Was,
oh, when they did like their farewell tour for some of the players.
Yeah, that was sold out. I mean, yeah, you can't get tickets to these things, man. And let's face it, we're all feeling a little bit of America pride right now because Olympics, Winter Olympics are coming up. Apparently today, in early Olympic qualifying, the United States beat Australia in curling. At least that's what I saw. I don't know if that was any, they beat. You'd better beat Australia in freaking curling. For goodness.
A curling team.
All right. So what's with all the ice? Welcome to the Olympics. Australia has a winter Olympic sport team. Okay.
Not quite Jamaica with a bobsled team.
Not great. But I mean, okay. Australia, welcome on in. Good luck. We have to. What we need to do is check the medal count for Australia in winter Olympics games. Have they ever won an Olympic medal in the winter? Oh, I bet in speed skating because that's just a chaotic mess.
I think they have. Yeah, they actually have. I think a pretty
New
good
Zealand.
Speed
it
skating.
was New Zealand. Yeah. Wasn't it? It was New Zealand one. Because everyone else fell at the last second. The guy was like a lap and a half back. And like, I'm the winner. And
come on, a win's a win.
Take it, New Zealand. It's all you, my friend. Good luck. Bundle up. Let me pull out the weather page here for tonight. Well, it's looking like, well, right now, currently at 4 degrees. That's a delicious 4, too. The wind chill is -15 right now. God. Coming up in a few hours, the low tonight will be -14. So I'm going to guess by game time at 6:30, we'll be down to 0.
Oh, for sure.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
What's the wind supposed to be? It's a little windy out there. Not much, but it's enough that it's going to make you even colder.
Oh, partly cloudy at a low around -14. Wind chill values as low as -23 with a north-northwest wind out of 5 to 10. Out of the north-northwest.
Yeah.
Delicious. Honduras, you're about to learn what the term extra crispy means, okay? Enjoy. Speaking of which, one thing I also want to make sure I mention, we do have the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announcees for these are not the people that are going to go in, but these are the people that are competing for it, okay? Beck, Duran Duran, Eminem, Dolly Parton, Lionel Richie, Carly Simon, A Tribe Called Quest are making their first appearances as potential inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in nominations for the class of 2022. They were announced Wednesday morning. These seven join 10 more artists who have been previously nominated in the past few years but still are on the ballot. Pat Benatar, Kate Bush, Devo, Eurythmics, Judas Priest, Fela Kuti, MC5, the New York Dolls, Rage Against the Machine, and Dionne Warwick. Oh, I love when those two matched up. Rage Against the Machine and Dionne Warwick. Just, do you know your way to blanking Santa Fe? I think that was the name of that song. I think that's actually how all the signs to Santa Fe read. Do you know the way to blanking Santa Fe? Welcome to California. The Hall announced this year's Rock and Roll Hall social channels on Sirius XM. Results are set to be revealed in May. So, okay, if you could have 5 of those, who would you take? Okay, Beck, Duran Duran, Eminem, Dolly Parton, Lionel Richie, Carly Simon, Tribe Called Quest. Also, Pat Benatar, Kate Bush, Devo, Eurythmics, Judas Priest, Fela Kuti, MC5, The New York Dolls, Rage Against the Machine, and Dionne Warwick.
Well, my first question is, didn't we just talk about this a few months ago when the Foo Fighters get in?
That was May.
It was last May. Are you kidding?
Yeah, that's how it happens, man.
Wow, insane. Oh, God, I don't know on that list you said. I mean, all of them have a pretty good case to get in. It's tough to make a case against any of them.
I'll make an argument against Beck. I don't think he's got – I mean, he's good, but
really?
I don't think he has the volume. Duran is an interesting one. Eminem's going to get in right away. Parton's going to get in right away.
Those are the first two obvious ones. Right?
Lionel Richie. How did you not put Lionel Richie in there?
How has he not been in already?
Exactly. Carly Simon. How does Carly Simon not get in?
Limited to five?
Well, that gives me four. Eminem, Dolly Parton, Lionel Richie, Carly Simon. So if I had – then those are from the new ones. I'm biased, but I'd say Kate Bush. I mean, I'm sorry. Go listen to 1983's The Dreaming and tell me it doesn't still sound like that album was just released today. That is still – I mean, every alternative female singer of the last 30 years has been copying her. She is just brilliant. I would make an argument Kate Bush should be the other person in there. But I also can make an easy argument for Dionne Warwick. Dionne Warwick, what a voice. And, you know, she actually has a pretty long list of hits. So – Eurythmics, okay, is it, you know, it's, oh, who is in the Eurythmics? I'm trying to, oh.
There's some big names they're going up against, though, too.
Yeah, I just.
Not going to help.
I don't. I would say Pat Benatar, Devo, do they have the volume of songs? I don't know. Eurythmics, but just thinking of the Eurythmics. You know, by themselves. Do they have that? No, not really. I don't think. They have some good ones. Judas Priest has a pretty good catalog, but a bit of a fringe artist. No.
It's kind of like in sports where people say the Hall of Very Good. That's where you would probably put some of these guys that aren't getting in. Yeah.
Rage Against the Machine. I love Rage Against the Machine. They don't have the volume. It's not saying they're not good, but I mean, you're comparing that to Lionel Richie, and I understand Lionel Richie. Well, that's soft rock. I don't like that. Okay. I'm looking just at the amount of number one hits, top 10 hits. The consistency that dude had for the 80s to hit the charts was amazing. Dolly Parton. You forget that she and Kenny Rogers took country. I mean, country music, and people weren't listening to country, and they single-handedly made country music in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, very widespread. You know, and gosh, how many songs did she have? Islands in the Stream? I mean, well, how many duets did she have in that time? 9 to 5 is a fantastic song. And, yeah, I could see her getting in. She's actually one of the few country stars that has actually been put up here. I can't see her not making it. I can make an argument for Eminem. Eminem has had a lot of songs. And what has been amazing about him is he has been able to be consistent actually having chart toppers over the last 30 years. So Duran Duran's a tough one. Duran Duran is tough. Okay, and I remember Rio, Hungry Like the Wolf. Oh, gosh. There were some from 1983 to about 1985, those guys couldn't put out a bad song. But then things kind of fell off. They did Notorious, came a little bit later. And, you know, the Bond film, View to a Kill, is pretty good. But, you know, I don't know if they've got the longevity. So is there one here that you just say if you could just pick one and put it in no matter what? You just move it from the good category to the great category. Is there one there that just screams out at you?
Well, I know we were talking about Dolly Parton. As I thought about that more, I guess technically you would think of her as more of a country, and maybe that's why she hasn't gotten in earlier. I think that's the obvious person that's got to go in right away, as well as Lionel Richie. But on the list of very good, these are the ones we said we didn't get in, right?
These are the ones that came back. Pat Benatar, Kate Bush, Devo, Eurythmics, Judas Priest, Fela Kunti, MC5, the New York Dolls, Rage Against the Machine, Dionne Warwick.
Maybe Dionne Warwick, yeah.
God, how is Dionne Warwick not in? How did she get on a ballot and not get in?
Yeah. As you said, yeah, some of these other Rage Against the Machine, Duran Duran, yeah. Probably not quite the depth to get in.
Yeah.
Rage, maybe. I don't know.
Well, Rage is close. Rage is close. Eurythmics last made it on the ballot in 2018, so they're back after a little bit. Their total of 5 to 7 will be voted in this year, so that's why I said five. You could, you know, say five.
Oh, they
to seven.
Could do a few more.
They could do a few more, but yeah, I just can't. I Tribe Called Quest. You can make an argument their impact has been pretty dramatic. I mean, they kind of spurred their own music genre, really. Which is, you know, anytime you do that, you need to kind of get in there. I think I'd make an argument for that. Carly Simon. Speaking of James Bond films, The Spy Who Loved Me. Yeah, she did that one.
Oh, gosh, you're right. Yes, yeah, yeah. That was a good song. One of the better ones.
That could actually be the best one. That's one of the best Bond songs of all time, The Spy Who Loved Me. The rest of that movie, no. it's a little goofy. Roger Moore was he was tough to take on some of those, but. Well, like I said, we'll find out in May here on this, but I could make an interesting argument for some of these, but some of these, like I said, Beck, I like Beck. I love the end of the show. The song at the end of the show is Beck. Dreams. That's Beck Dreams. I love Beck. I don't know if he's Hall of Fame yet, so we'll have to see. And plus the fact, isn't he still putting out music?
Oh, do you have to be kind of inactive to get anything?
I don't think so. Eminem still makes music. I know Judas Priest still makes music. Kate Bush still occasionally makes music. Actually, I don't think she – I think she might be done. But
yeah,
no.
What is that criteria? Yeah, because maybe you do have to be at least somewhat inactive to be eligible. Because you're right. Yeah, you don't want someone who's still currently full-time making music to get in. That'd be a little strange.
Yeah. I think it is actually kind of easy this year. Which is kind of interesting. This is kind of one of the first years I've looked and said, there are some about better than others. There's some pretty clear ones. So we'll find out in May. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. Get into some other stories before Stein here in about, 15 minutes. 15 minutes. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hey, boy. What you say, boy? You trying to play coy?
Yeah, why aren't the Jayhawks in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Come on, man. Hollywood Town Hall is such a great album. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's do the Minnesota coronavirus update for today before we get into Stein. Wednesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 3,916 newly reported cases. I want to repeat that because that's actually the lowest number of cases we've had in a day in a while. 3,916. The unfortunate part is, as we have mentioned before, on Tuesdays we have usually a pretty large number because we have 3 days of backlogged COVID tests that we're reporting. It seems the death count number, takes another day. And then today we have a very high number, 59 newly reported deaths in the state due to COVID. Don't fool yourself. Omicron's killing people. You know, it is. It is absolutely 59 people in one day. 59 people in one day. Wow. State's COVID-19 death toll now is 516. I remember, was it 6 months ago, I was saying, boy, it looks like we might be able to keep this death count below 9,000. Just sad. It's just incredibly sad. Today's update includes case data that was reported in a 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Tuesday, February 1. The latest deaths include two people aged 30 to 34 from Hennepin County. Minnesota's test positivity rate on a 7-day rolling average through January 22nd was 20.6. Once again, down again. It was at 21. It's at 20.6. Now, once again, I can try to put some rainbows and sunshine on this. It still is at 1 out of every 5 tests. Is coming back positive. I want to remind everyone, our test positivity rate, I think it was in late May or early June, was less than 1%. Things were looking really positive back then. We are a long way away from that. And you should know that it's you know, if you're going, you know, hanging out indoors, you're going to be doing something inside, you need to wear your mask because there's still a lot of people that have got COVID, and there's still a lot more people that are going to get COVID. It had been as high as 23.7 on January 21st. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota on the high risk threshold for community transmission. Through February 1st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,366. That's down once again from 1,370. Reported on January 31st, on those hospitalized, 204 people are in intensive care. That's actually up from 192. But 1,162 are in non-ICU care. That's down from 1,178. So that's, you know, they're picking up a little more in the ICU than drawing down. ICU COVID admissions rose to 374 on December 16th, has been falling ever since. So that's good. But it's only recently, it's only in the last 2 weeks, as it really started to drop I'm going to see if I can get Joe Eastman here tomorrow. We'll see if we can get one of his models again on this and see if we can do it. Looks like, yeah, I don't have a Democrat of the day today. I'm looking at Sandra Feist. Let's get feisty. We're going to have her on possibly tomorrow. But I'll see if I can get Joe Eastman on as well with us tomorrow to talk about his latest models. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 46 staffed ICU beds available in the entire state. This is actually down from 47 on January 31st. 19 pediatric ICU beds available, up from 17. As of January 31st, the state reported that 3,845,821 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,601,428 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 2,049,328 COVID third dose booster shots for COVID, and the total amount of cases in the state of Minnesota now rides at 1,347,000 even. The offspring of the Omicron variant, known as Omicron BA2 or Stealth Omicron, because it might be harder to test for identify, has been confirmed in Wisconsin, according to Dr. Ben Weston, chief health policy advisor for Milwaukee County. Weston retweeted on Monday that it was detected in Wisconsin, though he didn't specify where exactly the case was found. At this point, the World Health Organization has not designated BA2 a variant of concern, as a study from the Statens Serum Institute in Denmark found that Omicron BA2 is 1 to 5 times more transmissible than the original Omicron strain. Because, yeah, that's the only thing that was missing from that, was higher transmissibility rates. Jesus. However, University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy says that another study in Denmark found that while all people are susceptible to infection of BA2 regardless of vaccination status, increased transmissibility is particularly higher in unvaccinated people compared to the original Omicron strain. BA2, electric boogaloo. As they note, the study did find any increased transmissibility from vaccinated or boosted people who had BA2 breakthrough infections. It's unclear if BA2 is capable of causing more severe infection than the original Omicron variant, known as BA1. But health officials say that even though a person with natural or vaccine immunity can be infected with either Omicron strain, vaccines are effective against asymptomatic infection and reducing the risk of hospitalization and death. The CDC said at least 127 cases of the subvariant have been confirmed in the U.S., though it was believed to be circulating at a low level. The subvariant has not been confirmed in any Minnesota residents, but last Thursday, the Minnesota Department of Health detected a BA2 strain from a sample submitted from a Twin Cities testing site. Well, then you've got one in Minneapolis. The person from whom the sample was collected, oh, okay, they're not a Minnesota resident, but they were here. Well, they don't count. He's from Iowa. Really? This is one of their cases. Because I got news for you. If he's roaming around the Twin Cities, it counts. They have notified the health officials in that person's home state. Uh-oh, they're tattling. It's also unknown if a person who previously was infected with the original Omicron variant can now be infected with Omicron BA2, electric boogaloo. Wear a mask. Get vaccinated. Socially distance. Wear a mask, get vaccinated, socially distance. It's not just the command orders I've gotten from Biden. I mean, a suggestion.
Too many people are taking that literally.
Oh, no. Aha! Yes.
Or worse, George Soros sending you those orders.
Did George call? Oh, sorry.
We missed our daily phone call.
Oh, did we have
it? Gives us the talking points for the show, yeah.
Did he have the over-under on the soccer? Never mind. No, this is not because anyone is basically running some kind of global cabal with all the medical and scientists of the world, you know, all millions of them. No, this is because we want you to live, and I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt. So please, please, please get vaccinated. So wear a mask, socially distance. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. Stein, when we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Still no Jeff, huh?
Not quite.
I'll tell you what. Do you have the Jeff thing?
The Jeff music, even though he's not here?
No, play the Jeff music. He'll be here.
That's good. All right.
Let me check it.
Queued up here. Yeah.
Play the Jeff, just because I'm so used to it. All right. There we go. Ready? There we go.
Jeff.
Right on cue, just as I plays that, he calls.
Of course.
Jeff.
That song is the equivalent of the Jeff signal, like the bat signal, only his utility belt really kind of sucks. It's got a lot of pens on it, and a pager. So it is Jeff Stein, our political guru, national and presidential expert, noted author. Find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
How are you, Matthew?
I'm doing well. Did you hear my comment about your utility belt? Because the Jeff song is kind of like your bat signal. We play it.
I didn't understand the background, but right. but I'm totally on board. Between pocket protector, you know, extra headphones, you know, all the things that radio people need.
Well, I said pager.
I don't know what that is. Yeah. Although, this is bad. This is bad. I was out doing a radio remote. A real live radio station remote at the, get this, the Iowa Boat, RV, and Vacation Show.
Hello.
Uh-huh. Let's talk trailers.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, there's a little kid who comes up, must be 6 years old, and the father is talking to me, a listener to the station, you know, he's the one. Well, anyway, so she looks over at the broadcast table there, and she says, "Why do you have 3 cell phones?" And I said, "I'm just very unlucky." That's the answer. I should have stayed in school, girl. Go to school.
Let me explain about grades in college here. By the way,
whatever you do, don't go to the bar district when you go to college.
One quick question for you, and I have to ask this: how many radio stations in Iowa right now is there someone with a working pager? What's the percentage? That's
In Ames, pretty good.
Oh, yeah, it is. We used to have a pager. Even when I was there in the late 90s, I'm like, okay, are we sure we can't update our technology at this point? But
they
now,
probably still have the same vehicle. They used to have a vehicle at the radio station you worked for in Ames. And I don't know, it looked like a little Ford Escort four-door. And they called it the grocery getter because it looked like what mom would take to go to the Hy-Vee.
Oh, yeah. You know, they had a Norelco coffee pot. A Norelco coffee pot.
Well, you know, when I think coffee, I think Norelco.
I think the same company that makes shavers. They had a filter in that thing that was – I've never seen a coffee filter in my life that was the same way. It was like a donut. And it was quite literally – I have no idea where she even found them. The owner of the station even found the things. But she had like a box and a half in the back. And, you know, it was.
Yes, the grocery getter. Actually, the first radio station I worked for was owned by a newspaper. Mm-hmm. And they had a bright red El Camino pickup as the station vehicle. Now, this is 1980, all right, those of you who are old enough to remember 1980. And the slogan that was painted on the side was, "We print the message in your ears." And the first time I saw it, they said, "Why don't you take El Camino?" And I said, "Take it where? To the scrapyard?" I mean, you know, this was Bill Clinton with AstroTurf in the back. I mean, holy cow.
Are they the people making the Blade Runner people? Never mind.
I don't know. Let me tell you, you would not find a vehicle like that on Rudy Luther's lot.
No, you would not. No, you would not. Hey, okay, Trump's not having a good week. All right, let's just get into that.
That didn't narrow it down. That did not narrow it down a bit.
He's dangling pardons for capital attackers, admitted his goal was to have the overturn the election, and is now calling the House to investigate Pence for not throwing out votes in multiple states so a president who lost could keep power. You know, I understand. I think we all understand. The people that are listening to him don't care. They don't care about this. But there are people who are investigating him. He yeah. doesn't seem to remember that. And he is basically, especially with when people were talking about the House and the Senate tightening up the rules and basically clarifying, no, the vice president cannot throw out Electoral College votes. They have to basically just accept them. And that's just that. And him coming out is like, well, if they have to fix something, clearly he could have done it. So why didn't he throw out those votes and allow me to stay president? I'm like, OK, you just admitted to the crime, you idiot. He just doesn't, you know. Is it desperation, do you think? Do you think he's realizing the walls are indeed closing in, and so he's just becoming more and more unabashed in his tacks?
There is no understanding of reality. So it is not a matter of he feels the walls closing in. He has no idea that there are walls in the room, okay? I mean, he is in his world, all right? And it has served him, to this point, well in life. Okay, I mean, what has stuck to him in his business or even personal career, in his personal life? I mean, he pays it off, whatever it is. The thing that is interesting about the argument of, well, why would they need to fix the law unless he could have done it all along? I look at it a different way. They're trying to fix the law because too many people think that he could have rejected the votes, because you have stirred up that argument, and this is to simply settle the issue once and for all. It is not because Pence could have done it. It is to make sure no one else makes that claim in the future.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, I think it was Colbert made the point. He said, it's not, you don't, we're not doing this because there was a loophole. You're doing this because someone tried to do it. And we're basically, because of your failed attempt to try to usurp the law, we're making it very clear. I mean, to a point, it's not like when Wilson, at the end of Wilson's presidency, he had his debilitating stroke. He wasn't the president of the United States. I mean, his wife was basically president. She would go into a room, come out and tell you with a signed document saying this is what he wanted to do or not do. And so the case, but there was nothing on the books. They had laws. They had put the constitutional amendment in there to fix if a president was assassinated, the line of power, but they did not have anything in there if the president became debilitated. And so they had to clarify that. That's not this. This was someone, you know, they basically have had a bunch of hacks write legal arguments, which would be laughed out of court any single day to try to justify this. And so they're basically saying, so no one else will even try it. No, you can't do this.
I am also struck by all of a sudden now the, you know, January 6th, pardon them all.
Oh, God.
And the fact that this was – it's one thing to say it at a rally, okay? And I'm not saying it's right. Don't get me wrong. It is one thing to say it at a rally, but to find out that there were plans drawn up to do this when he was still president, imagine that. Oh. Imagine if, as he is flying away from Washington on Air Force One, he fires up the office one last time, signs a blanket pardon, which really you couldn't do because you have to identify persons, right?
Yeah.
You can't say, I hereby pardon any person who might be charged. No, you have to have individuals by name.
Was it Ford that pardoned all the people, or not Ford, or Carter that pardoned all the people that ran into Canada?
But you could identify those by name, could you?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now that makes sense.
You're right. You're very likely correct. I mean, it was probably, but I'm just saying it at that point. Okay, the inauguration day was 2 weeks, 14 days after the January 6th incident. How many people were actually charged by then? Even
well, exactly.
Okay, so the concept of, well, we should pardon everyone. Just imagine if that had happened.
I think
those of you complaining because some of your loved ones have been in custody for more than 365 days, don't worry. I'm going to take care of it all. That is a hard campaign plank to nail into a platform at the same time you're complaining about other illegalities that are being done. You know, our cities are burning down, our borders are porous, et cetera, et cetera. We need law and order, unless you were in Washington on January 6th of 2021. I don't think that he even got a great response from his crowd. as I recall.
There was some applause, but it wasn't, you know, the raucous one, that's for sure. And I got to admit, let's just pure speculation on this. If he was to basically oh, we're getting a little bit of feedback there. So if he was to basically have done this, he would have already. I think they had already charged him with a crime by now. I mean, I think they would have charged him by a crime by June.
Oh gosh, if he would have done a blanket pardon, well, what would they have? What was it that you could accuse him of?
Conspiracy.
Well, okay, but that's no different than now, is it? Well, I mean, they're trying to get conspiracy on him. I take your point, but what I guess I'm saying is the pardon would not have stopped the investigation, and they don't have it now. Would it have led to even more of a firestorm? Oh, heavens, yes. Mm. You know, but it's just interesting of, you know, how many of these people have not come to a resolution of their case? Well, many. How many might testify? I don't know. I mean, there's you've got an interesting situation there, too, because have they really even apprehended any ringleaders? I don't think
The guys from the one group, the guy with the eye patch.
The Oath Keepers? But could they have pulled off this whole thing?
But the problem is that, you know, what I think you've got is you've got the ringleaders there who basically seem to have been working with – well, and the implication was working with Roger Stone and with these command centers to help coordinate things that are going on. And that's the question. Who were those people listening to in the headsets? When they had their headsets on and they were storming the Capitol, who were those people listening to? And, yeah. You know, if you can track that back to any of these hotel command centers, well, then you've got a really big problem. But
if you can, right,
yeah, if right. you can. But I mean, I think that I'm over the last month or so. I'm kind of gotten the real impression. I think for the first time, most of the Republican Party, maybe 55-60%, they've kind of moved past him. I don't get me wrong; he still has his loyal followers, but I think the Republican Party is definitely looking to move past him at this point.
Well, you've got two things there, and it's a very astute point. You've got two things. One is, do you want him to run in 2024, or have you, quote, moved past him? Because he's a useful tool for 2022. He can go out there and say outlandish things. He can raise money. He is clearly not going to declare a candidacy until after this November's general election. There's just no question. I don't see any scenario whereby he himself declares his candidacy. He'll tease it. He'll do all of this. So can he get a crowd? Can he tell people to vote for his people, et cetera, et cetera? Sure. But how many Republicans have now, within even just the past week, said, you know, the president holds a very important point in history, but I would prefer that he not run again. I mean, when you actually have real live Republican office holders, knowing that Trump holds a grudge, when they actually will utter in public, oh, I think he's had his time, we should look to someone else with his ideas for 2024, it's making your point. Mm-hmm. They want to use him for as much as they can now, because, again, he's a useful tool for them, but they don't want to be on the ballot with him in 2024 because of his tendency to blow the whole thing up, the talking points, and who knows whatever else is buried just under the surface.
Yeah, I think he's waiting to see if his Trump candidates in 2022 do well, then he'll probably stick around. But if not, I think he'll be himself looking for the door, because he's not dumb on that level. He knows if he's not going to win, he doesn't want to be the loser. Again, he has mentally affected that dude. Tell you what, let's take a break. When we come on back, let's talk Biden. Let's actually talk. We're going to go international. Let's talk about Putin and Ukraine here when we do return. Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual Wednesday visit. Jeff, Ukraine, and I mean, we can talk about Biden. I don't necessarily, you know, we obviously he's moving some more troops closer to the Ukraine. along with, I think it was Poland and Great Britain as well, kind of coming in and trying to bolster up Ukraine at this point. I think it just shows you everything. When Vladimir Putin's negotiation is, here's the deal. We will not invade Ukraine as long as all the former Russian republics that are now their own country, if you just pull all the troops out of them, we promise we'll stay behind our lines. I mean, geez, he's not very good at hiding what his ultimate goal is. He wants to rebuild the former Soviet Union.
Well, I want to say he wants to put the band back together, yeah. But I'm now more.
I want to put the band back together.
You are just a one-man United Nations, aren't you? I mean, I was waiting for you to drop in a moose and squirrel reference.
Moose and squirrel.
That's it.
Hey, Rookie.
Let's make that a drop. Okay. Gosh, I'm just thrown by your impressions. Okay, so, yeah. Here's the thing with Putin. Yes, it could very well be a bait and switch. It could be a little sleight-of-hand thing. Pay attention to Ukraine, and I'm going to go do this other stuff here. Look, Putin understands the power of the former Soviet Union. I mean, he grew up in this system. All right, so the fact that he might try to put these pieces back together if he senses an opportunity, and please note the way I phrase that. I did not say because he senses weakness in the American president. He senses an opportunity. You've got China and Taiwan. You've got everybody paying attention to the Olympics coming up. He senses an opportunity. And what I find just fascinating about it is that the folks in Ukraine are saying, this is no big deal. We're not really worried about it. Why are they saying that publicly? Because you would think you would want to marshal all the support you could. Because what it's doing then is, in a neutral air of public opinion, it's making Biden look like a warmonger. How can either the Ukrainians be so out of touch with what's really going on out their window? I mean, I don't understand why there's such a disconnect in message. And if Biden, by his comments, is suggesting, look, we got to watch Putin. He's a bad dude. Okay, that's not a bad thing. But then why are the Ukrainians saying what they're saying? That one puzzles me a little bit.
Well, in the Ukraine specifically, it's their president over there who actually was supported by Putin. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily an Anschluss sort of thing there where it is. I will say this from what I've seen from the papers in Kiev and other places in Ukraine, they're very livid about this. They don't want the Russians in there. And I think that Putin is, I mean, this is not the old Soviet Empire. These are money hungry fools. They want more money. They get Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Belarus back in. And, you know, that's a lot of land, that's oil, that's a lot of things. I think that's kind of what their whole goal is it's they're trying to rebuild the Soviet Empire, but not for the glory of the Soviet Republic, but because they're money hungry and they want more land. And right now their feeling is that the best opportunity to do that would be get these other countries back in. I mean, of course. And I'm not sure exactly. I mean, I haven't paid too much attention with the case of like Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, which is on the southern side and between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. But I think that I think that's what the Russians want is they want these provinces back, these countries back that basically were able to produce oil, food, sure, land, and this is the quickest way for them to get more money.
Okay, now let me turn it on its head in our brief remaining moments.
Yeah.
A lot of people in this country are saying this is Joe Biden and wag the dog. This is Joe Biden trying to divert attention to failed policies domestically, and so he's going to get us into a war. All right, what if this is Putin playing a game to try to make Biden look bad? In other words, he's diverting the U.S. government's attention from such things as COVID, from the economy, from other areas of the world. Is this, you know, maybe Putin's end goal, I believe you, what you said, I think it's to amass riches and land and all of this and control it all top to bottom again. But what if what he's trying to do is simply, this is his best way to throw the American government off its game? That's another plausible explanation for some of this.
First of all, I think Biden is handling Putin as best as anyone could. I don't have any problem. The problem that you have with that is this, as opposed to a wag the dog argument, which was, by the way, how many Muslim Yugoslavians were slaughtered? Yeah. Wag the Dog basically prevented us from actually stopping a genocide because for political reasons. This case, it's clear they're amassing troops. We all see it. We've got spy planes and satellites. We see what they're doing. Well, sure. They're on the border, and it's not just us. It's our allies in Europe that are starting to warn of this. I found it interesting, that whole war games thing they were going to do off the Irish coast, with the Irish said, no, you can't do this anymore. I think that was clearly, once again, trying to intimidate the UK by trying to have war games near their shoreline. But the Irish then eventually came back and said, no, you can't do it by our shoreline either.
Well, and again, I'm not suggesting anything I'm not suggesting this administration is doing anything badly, but you have heard that, right? You've heard people say that Biden is pushing. And I'm just saying, you know, is Putin just trying to divert people's attention from other things? So, for example, to your earlier point, fine, he's putting troops on the Ukrainian border, but is that the fake, the head fake, and he's going to do something else that nobody is ready for? I mean, I'm not putting that past him either.
Did you see you know how he got all upset? Putin got all upset about the people taking the photos of his house and showing exactly how actually monumentally wealthy that guy is. This dude just revolves around money. He wants money. He wants to keep up with Elon Musk and Bezos. That's what I think he wants to do. And this is the fastest.
Do your Bezos impression. He has all the money.
I want to rock it. Give me a cowboy hat. I'll pull that off for you. All right.
There we go.
Books at Next Chapter Books, Iowa Politics Report. I'll post a little bit later. Jeff, we will talk to you next Wednesday, my friend. Take care.
Andy Devine on a rocket. That's what you want.
Hour 2 up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Hour 2 rolling through. Matt, Brett here today. Brett, we've got a weather forecast, not from our good friend Sven, who, once again, all our best. He's over at Crosstown at NPR now, and I couldn't be happier for him. And like I said, what took everyone so damn long to hire that guy? Absolutely top-notch weather guy. And still, sign up for his Patreon page. That's very good. No, we have decided here we're going with the AM 950 special as far as weather, a large rodent. Welcome to Pennsylvania. Punxsutawney Phil has made his annual prediction. Yet once again, bad news for anyone hoping to end cold weather if you take your weather forecast from a large rat. Fat rat. Groundhog. On Wednesday morning, the legendary groundhog emerged from his snowy hole on Gobbler's Knob. Why does that? That sounds far dirtier than it is. Is a snowy hole on Gobbler's Knob. On Punxsutawney. OnlyFans page, people. OnlyFans. And just like last year, he saw his shadow, the little rat bastard. Per tradition, that means we cook him and have a delicious stew. I don't actually know. I'm just mean 6 more weeks of winter, which we're Minnesota. It's February 2nd. Was that actually really in question? Was that an option? It was like, I didn't realize, can I take summer now? We can go with summer, right? Nope, apparently not. But apparently this is what gets Pennsylvanians through the day. However, he might not be right. Really? Come on. The groundhog might not be able to understand the complexities of the weather systems? Okay. The NOAA has previously reported that Phil's predictions pan out just 40% of the time.
But he can't even bat 500 on this. You would think a 50-50 chance.
Yeah. Let me make sure something obvious for everyone, okay? It is February 2nd. When does winter begin? When does winter end? March 21st, right? Mm-hmm. It's 6 weeks anyway. He's just looking at a calendar, for God's sakes. Jeez, is it going to be 6 weeks? I don't know. Is the Earth still spinning around the sun? Yeah, it's going to be 6 weeks. He just should come out and say, hey, it's going to be another 6 weeks. I got a calendar. I got one of the AM 950 calendars in here. Just 1, 2, 3. Actually, it's 7. But still, you know, it's a little close enough, all right? Winter has been bleak and dark and bereft of hope. Wow, that's the positive message that you want to start off with, Groundhog Club. Yet winter is just another step in the cycle of life, read Phil's proclamation, translated from his native tongue of Groundhoggy. So someone knows his native tongue? Yeah. What are you doing with that large rodent there, Groundhog Club.
Especially on Gobbler's Knob.
Gobbler's Knob with the snowy hole. Come on.
And his native tongue. Oh, boy.
Oh, I got I got a cosplay that's coming to life on my OnlyFans page. I can already tell you right now. Guess who's coming out of Gobbler's Knob? You guys really need to work on the names out there. As I look over the faces of the true believers from around the world, you're a rodent. As I look around the faces of the true believers around the world, I bask in the warmth of your hearts. Phil's proclamation continued, I couldn't imagine a better fate with my shadow I have cast than a long and lustrous six more weeks of winter. At that, the faces of the true believers with their warm hearts basically clubbed him to death. Just days before the annual weather – they didn't. Puxatawny Phil is still there. Just day before the annual weather predicting festivities, New Jersey's own beloved prognosticator sadly died.
The New Jersey's got
New Jersey. Milltown Mel recently crossed over the Rainbow Bridge. A post on the Groundhog's official Facebook page said, is he Thor? Rainbow Bridge? Is he Norse? I didn't know groundhogs were Norse in their religions. Considering the average lifespan of a groundhog is about 3 years, that's not much of a shock. Well, it is a groundhog. But Mel has left us a tough time of the year when most... Yeah, what is the forecast when, hey, let's go into the old Gobbler's Knob and pull out the... Oh, he's dead. Well, that's not a good sign.
Well, if he's in New Jersey, does he really want to come outside at all? He might just want to...
Oh, I can just... Pennsylvania's got this lovely, ornate attempt at, you know, a frost poem, as they try to do. I can imagine what New Jersey is. Hey, you blankety blanks, there's going to be blankety six more blankety weeks of winter. Shut up! Thanks, New Jersey. Go Devils! That's a, does he? Yeah, does he have like a Devils logo shaved in the groundhog's chest?
Jeez.
And he smells of marinara. Oh, the New Jersey groundhog. That actually has to be a reality series we have to see.
New Jersey groundhog, yeah.
Considering I've already read about the lifespan of the groundhog. The origins of the Groundhog Day date back from the early days of Christianity in Europe, according to the Pennsylvania Tourism Office. This is one of those things I think we got wrong. I think they were just looking for something to eat, and somehow it became weather-related. The current celebration of roots in Candlemas Day, when Christians would take their candles to the church and have them blessed. As skies were clear that day, that meant an extended winter. We didn't understand weather patterns back then, did we? I don't think we did. There's a jet stream. Never mind. It's kind of wasted on these people at this point. Groundhog Day was first recorded in Puxatawny Phil in 1886. The tradition has maintained its popularity the first year, despite some naysayers. Can I ask this question? Who was the first guy in 1886? Behold, I've come up with a fine idea to promote our town. Okay, what is it? Do you see that large rodent over there? Yeah, the groundhog, right? Yeah, I want you to pick it up and put it next to your ear. Why? Because he's going to tell you what the weather is from his home at Gobbler's Knob. Oh, okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. Gobbler's Knob? No, that's, we're going to change that name, right? Even back in 1886, I was like, whoa, no. There you go. Six more weeks of winter, according to the rodent.
You seem to have the same attitude about Puxatawny Phil as Bill Murray did in that movie.
Phil? Phil Connors?
Not big fans of the Puxatawny Phil, yeah.
I do love that movie. I will watch your – thank you. I'm watching Groundhog Day tonight. I got the Wild Game on. After the Wild Game, I'm going to watch Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day. God, that movie is great.
I do the radio thing at the beginning.
It's cold out. It's cold every morning. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, you do not need a groundhog to find out about when winter is. You can look at the AM 950 calendar. I believe we put the first day of spring on there. Correct? Can you check the calendar on March 21st? If we've got, do you have a calendar there that says, does it say?
I do. Let's take a look here. Yeah, see if we can do what Puxatawny Phil does.
Six more weeks of winter, you say. Wow. Wow. Who could have seen that coming? You don't need a large rodent to tell you this. We are basically have the ability for you to look at it, and it's pretty, and it's got my photos in there. All you have to do is go to am950radio.com, click on the subscribe page, become a member of AM950, make a donation, either one time or recurring, and we will send you a 2022 calendar. Does it say in March?
We don't, but there's a good way you can keep track of it, though, because one day after the first day of spring was your first show on AM950.
Was it?
According to our calendar, yes.
12 years, man. It's coming on 12.
So think of it that way. When it's Matt's first day on the radio show here at AM950, it's the first day of spring.
Hi, everybody. My name is Matt McNeil. I'm 6 years old. We're going to do some radio. Yeah. I have aged, like I said, the portrait of Dorian Gray, only my portrait was painted by that woman that took Jesus and turned him into monkey Jesus, you know, over in Spain. Yeah, that's my portrait. Ah! 952-946-6205. If you'd like the calendar, go to AM950 Radio. Click on the member page, become a member, donate, and we'll send you one of the calendars. And they are beautiful. It's a thank you gift from us here at AM950. As a matter of fact, I got an idea about something with the calendars. We'll have to talk to you about that. We'll keep it. I've said too much. We'll come on back to that here in a little bit. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's get an update on the main story from yesterday. The two teenagers suspected in the fatal shooting outside of South Education Center in Richfield Tuesday were also students at the school. Police Chief Jay Henthorne said Wednesday morning that two individuals aged 18 and 19 remain in Hennepin County Jail, could face criminal charges as soon as Thursday afternoon. The Jamari Rice, 15 years old, was killed in the shooting just out the front entrance of the school shortly after noon on Tuesday. A 17-year-old victim remains in critical condition on Wednesday morning after being taken to HCMC following the incident. Hethorn said there is also an additional 19-year-old victim who suffered a minor injury at the scene but was not taken to the hospital. The chief said all five of the individuals, the two suspects and the three victims, were enrolled as students at South Education Center, which serves a wide range of students from across the Twin Cities through pre-K through transition. By the way, it does sound like I mentioned yesterday that I've been to this school. I mean, my kids had a summer class there, and so I've actually been to the school. It does indeed sound like that the shooting took place not necessarily on Penn Avenue, but actually in the driveway into the school on the sidewalk there. That's what at least it looks like from the photographs that I've seen of the scene, it does look like that's where they were working the crime scene, was closer to the school there. The shooting was not random, said Henthorne, who said there may have been an altercation in front of the school between the five students just prior to the shooting, potentially related to a prior dispute. The two suspects immediately fled the scene. Henthorne said both were arrested just after 6 p.m. on two separate Minneapolis homes as SWAT teams executed a search warrant. Law enforcement also found the suspect vehicle and served five more search warrants into the evening. Officers recovered two guns, one at a Minneapolis address, one at a Crystal residence. Henthorne said ballistics testings will be done to determine if either or both were involved in the shooting at the school. Investigators are also currently sifting through video to see if any cameras captured the incident. The FBI and the ATF have also provided support for the supporting shooting response and the investigation. William McCrary, a special agent in charge of the ATF's St. Paul Field Division, said the agency is assisting with the weapons part of the investigation. Superintendent Sandy Lewandowski said school staff will be focused on beginning the healing process, pledging a flexible approach to support students based on their individual needs. Those who are ready to return to school will be able to do so beginning on Friday. Richfield Mayor Maria Reagan Gonzalez also spoke, calling for an absolute challenging 24 hours for the city. She called Rice one of the community's young leaders, saying he loved football and spending time with friends. He should have had a lifetime of joy and happiness and growth ahead of him, she said, offering condolences to his loved ones. Everyone says this, but you have that feeling you'll see the news and you don't think this is ever going to happen in your community. Unfortunately, it does. Not every community is safe from what happened yesterday here in Richfield. And that's the truth. And some people might say, well, why aren't you trying to say there's hope at the end of the tunnel? Until we get these guns off the streets, there's not. This is the world you guys have created. The Republicans have created this world of guns, 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 guns. And their response every time is more guns. And we have more shootings. We have more death. We have more carnage. It is a never-ending cycle because your arguments don't work. But you guys, you know that. You know that none of this works. It doesn't keep people safer. It doesn't. So there's some guy out in a fourth-tier suburb who's sitting in a house that no one is ever going to rob, who's sitting surrounded by guns, and you use that guy as a, see, he's safe. Yeah, but he's a paranoid, delusional freak who sits in his house terrified of the world outside. Guns, guns, guns everywhere. These guns don't make us safer. My God, I've talked about this over and over again. Back when Pawlenty and his crew basically passed the carry and conceal law, they all said, this crime will cease to exist in Minnesota. And now they said, we never said that. They said that all the time. I came across quote after quote after quote of these guys saying, this is really going to end crime. This is going to cease. You know, crime levels are going to drop. No, they haven't. There are more guns everywhere, and we've got more and more people being shot. You have to get the guns off the street. And before you say, Second Amendment allows you. The Supreme Court's already ruled on that. Well-regulated militia basically says you can regulate guns. We had a legal semi-automatic ban, and the Republicans got rid of that. We could stop this tomorrow. We just choose not to because the people that are in power basically are betrothed to make sure that the gun and bullet manufacturers make as much money as possible. And that's that. That's all it is. They try to wrap it in patriotism and freedom. No, it's they're basically making sure the people that bankroll their campaigns get big payouts by making sure guns are dealt with in the least safe way possible. Proof of this. I'll give you a proof of this. They have guns that are like one of those James Bond guns where it matches your hand, that unless it's your hand holding the gun, you can't fire that. Everyone's like, well, okay, that's actually a pretty good deal. Prevents people from stealing a gun or using a gun against someone that's in their own house. My gosh, I mean, that's actually a pretty good idea. Republicans and the NRA have been fighting these handprint guns harder than anyone because a handprint gun more than likely will never be able to be used in a crime. A gun that basically doesn't have that safety requirement on it, well, guess what? That can be stolen and used in a crime. They could sell it to someone else and they can use it. This is not about keeping us safer. It's about keeping us scared. And the more scared they are, people, the more guns they buy. And that's all this is. The more scared we are, the more guns we buy. So they're not going to make our lives better. They're not going to make our society better. They're going to make it worse and worse by pouring more and more guns and bullets into our society until we're all just terrified, walking around like a freaking walking dead with a hand on the trigger and the safety off and a round in the chamber. It is sad. Another sad loss. And Republicans cue the thoughts and prayers. They do not care because profit margins for a gun company matter to them far more than the lives of the citizens of the United States. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. There it is. 952-946-6205. I did a dance remix of the telephone number. There you go. The latest story that was developing today, Minneapolis police shot and killed a man inside a downtown apartment building after authorities say he brandished a gun while officers were serving an arrest warrant on Wednesday morning. The shooting happened just before 7 a.m. at the Bolero Flat apartment homes on Mark Avenue. This is basically across the street from Orchestra Hall. Officials say about midday news conference Wednesday, authorities haven't released the name of the man who was killed or the officer who fired. Interim Police Chief Amelia Huffman told reporters that members of the department's SWAT team were in the area Wednesday morning serving search warrants on behalf of St. Paul Police in connection to a homicide investigation. This is the call that no police chief wants to receive. Wrenching for everyone involved and passing along our condolences to the man's family. Huffman said the officers entered the secured building using a key fob, went directly to the target apartment, which residents said was on the seventh floor. They loudly and repeatedly announced police search warrant. Well, I mean, you generally, if you got a search warrant, you generally not, hello, 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 police. I think loudly is kind of a you know, an unnecessary adjective there. She said that before they entered the unit, within 9 seconds of entry, officers encountered a man who said she said was holding a handgun. What happened next remains murky, but Huffman said that one of the officers on the scene shot the man. Officers rendered aid and carried the man outside, where paramedics took over. The man died at a nearby hospital. Huffman said the loaded 5.7-millimeter handgun was recovered at the scene. It's not clear whether the man shot was the same person who was being sought by law enforcement. Huffman and Mayor Fry declined to take questions, but as she, the mayor, and other officials filed out of the room, Huffman confirmed that she had seen body cam footage of the incident. In the past, authorities have taken weeks, sometimes months, to release the video, but local officials have promised to do more quickly in future cases. I'm not going to repeat what Jacob Fry had to say. Here's what I'll say. I'm going to guess, when it comes to body cam footage, the police are easy to figure out. If what actually happened happened, oh, they released the body cam footage really quick. You know, yeah, we'll get that out to you. Now, here you can see it. And by all accounts here, I don't think there's anything here that tells me there's anything wrong. The fact that we recovered the gun on the scene, you know, and if body cam footage, you know, shows the, you know, what happened here is, you know, the guy, they open the door and the guy has a gun in his hand. Well, you know, that's not exactly how you answer the door with the police. You know, especially if they announce themselves, as opposed to, say, the Stallings case. But as I bring up the Stallings case, and I want to remind everyone, Stallings was a guy. He was on Lake Street. This is in 2 days after George Floyd. And the police rolled on out there in this aggressive stance where they were firing rounds at crowd control runs, rounds at distance at random people, innocent people, because they wanted to send a message. They came in an unmarked vehicle, unannounced, opened the door, opened fire on Stallings. He thought he was being attacked by white supremacists because the police never said anything. Pulled his own gun, fired back, and that's when all of a sudden, oh, we're the police! Oh, okay. They proceeded to beat the man in the street and then charged him with crimes, which then they didn't want to release the body cam footage. They didn't want to release any of that. Funny, because all the body cam footage showed that every cop that was on assignment that night was a piece of freaking garbage. An absolute piece of garbage that should have been fired or arrested after all the crap they pulled that night. Dear Lord. But that's why that body cam footage was, oh, we really don't want to show it to you. You know, we got to keep privacy. We don't, why would you want to see that footage? Just trust us that Stalling is guilty and throw him in jail for the rest of his life. And we got to remember, the prosecutor, everyone in that case, was knowingly prosecuting Stallings, knowing he hadn't done anything wrong. But they didn't want the body cam footage out because the body cam footage showed that he had done nothing wrong. And the jury found that way, too. Just pathetic. But here, you know, if all of a sudden, here 3 days later, here's the body cam footage. Guess what we got? Guess what? We have body cam footage this time. Hey, guess what? Oh, you know, you have to trust us on what happened in the basement of that building when the shooting happened. We were supposed to have body cams on, but none of the officers had their body cams on when they, oh, gee willikers, don't you wish we had some body cam footage of that shooting? But just trust us on when it happened. And generally, my experience has been, if they're not showing you what happened, they don't want you to see what happened. If they come on out in this case, quickly show you the body cam footage, well, that's, and it happened as advertised. And it's tragic. You know, someone lost their life. Person made a bad mistake. But if they've got the body cam footage that backs up their version of the story, guess what? We'll see it very quickly. See, proof. But it's when you have cases like Stallings, where you guys weren't being honest, where you weren't telling the truth, that's when I have very little patience for you. That's when I have very little patience for this. Well, we can't show you this now. Gosh, you need to basically put in a request for a Freedom of Information Act, and then we're going to fight that in court, and then we're going to have an order saying we have to release it, but we're still not going to release it. So then you have to go back to court, and they'll hold us and condemn it. And finally, I guess we'll release it long after everyone that should have been fired or arrested is retired or transferred to a different department. The Minneapolis Police Department way. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Ooh, let's look at the caucus results for the Republicans. Oh, delicious. We'll talk more about that in a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. Well, let's take a little peeky-boo over the Republican caucus numbers, shall we? Because, you know, you got to be careful. They can't allow some kind of loony nutbag anti-vaxxer become the governor candidate or else they're doomed. Minnesota Republican caucus goers gave gubernatorial hopeful Dr. Scott Jensen a campaign boost on Tuesday night. We lovingly call him the witch doctor, because we don't know which doctor is going to show up. Is it the doctor that wanted to actually have insulin for needy diabetic patients available? Or is it the dude that's out there saying, no vaccines for kids? Yeah, which one is it? Which doctor? It's the witch doctor. Still one of my favorite nicknames, too. The witch doctor, Scott Jensen. A campaign boost on Tuesday night is an outspoken vaccine skeptic who once called for civil disobedience over pandemic-related public health measures won the Minnesota GOP's straw poll for governor. Let's go to the big tally board, shall we, kids? Jensen, now, okay, we first of all have to acknowledge, all right, and I'm going to be the first to say it. Caucuses are kind of garbage for dictating who is the candidate, because they're easily somewhat manipulable. There was only about 16,000 votes for the Republican caucus in the state, which, by the way, in a state of 5.6 million people, they had basically 16,000 votes. There are some Republicans today, it's like, wow, what a monumental turnout. That's hardly anyone, dude. That's hardly anyone. But they had their loyals come on, and that's just – okay, and what am I saying? That's just your basic standard loyal Republican showing up for caucus night. 16,000 in the state. How many counties in the state? Is it 99?
Yeah, I think it's 99.
Okay, let's see. Math corner here. So if it's 16,000 divided by 99, 161 people per county. Wow! Really, really scorching up the charts there, aren't you? That's going to be about the amount of people in every section of the frozen U.S. men's team soccer game coming up here in about 2 hours. So, yeah. Yeah, there are going to be more people. There are going to be more people at Allianz Field watching the United States and Honduras outside in the middle of winter on a soccer game than showed up for the Republicans on caucus night in the entire state. Ooh, boy, what monumental numbers. Anywho, Scott Jensen got 6,144 votes, which is a big old 38%. Like I said, I'll be the first to kind of, caucuses are what they are. I don't know how reliable they are. But I will say this, if you are a traditional Republican, you should be wetting yourself right now. Gazelka got 2,206 votes, 14%. And Michelle Benson got 1,076 votes, 7%. And boy, Benson did not do well in the caucus. I'm going to be surprised if she's around for too much longer. If you put Gazelka and Benson together, who are pretty much the most normal, traditional Republican candidates, I guess you could say. I guess Kendall Qualls, you could throw Kendall Qualls. Let's throw Kendall Qualls on then there, okay? We'll take all of his 1,802 votes, which was 11%. So if you take the three more traditional Republican candidates, Benson, Gazelka, and Qualls, 11 plus 14, that is 32% of the vote. Still, all their votes combined, still 6% behind Dr. Scott Jensen. You guys have got a problem. Because I can tell you right now, when you look at Mike Murphy and Neil Shaw and Undecideds, and you're expecting that there's going to be a dramatic shift in those to help you out, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think these other fringe candidates, and we haven't even talked about Stanek, who joined the race really late. I did see some votes for him, but he doesn't show up on any of the tally boards I've seen. I think he came in so late that he must have been write-ins, and so maybe 100 votes, maybe, kind of last second. I would say, if you look at this, let me run the best to worst. Jensen was number one at 30. Gazelka was number two at 14%, a good 24 points behind. Wow, that's a lot. But what I'll say is, too, and here's the thing. This kind of goes back to what I learned about caucuses in 2016. Jensen's got a very loyal following. And does that loyal following change dramatically with this caucus win? I don't know. I don't think he's going to pick up too much. But he doesn't need much. He's only 12 percentage points away of everyone else's votes to having 50, and it's over. After Gazelka, Neil Shaw kind of surprised at 12%. Kendall Qualls and Mike Murphy each got 11%. Qualls a little more than Murphy, but they both fell into the 11% category. Michelle Benson, whose daily affirmations videos are just a delight. Oh, God. If you need to get to sleep fast, kids. 7% is what she got, and that matched Undecideds. Yeah. That's a little trouble for you Republicans, aren't you? The former state senator for Chaska garnered 38% of the votes, 93% of precincts reporting. The registered caucus attendees who cast their ballots in secret at precinct caucuses throughout the state yesterday, every day Minnesotans were the heroes. They will be again in November, Jensen said on Twitter. Yeah, when they put Wells back in for another 4 years. Thanks, doctor. Thanks, witch doctor. People from all walks of life stepped into the arena and came out in droves to support our movement. Well, in droves, you mean 6,144 out of a population. All right, let's see what he considers droves. 6,144. We'll just go with 5.7 million divided by 5,700,000 equals, wow. He has pulled out a impressive, what droves is for him is 0.00001% of the state population. Wow, droves.
You could get more in CHS Field than what he had.
You could get more over at Bina Field, at the Bina High School field.
Probably.
6,000 would be an average football night over at a rural farm district football field, okay? Please. Droves, he says. Yesterday, everyday Minnesotans were the heroes, and they'll be in November. While not enough of the majority, Jensen's 6,144 votes far outpaced the five other named gubernatorial candidates on the ballot. I'm sorry, I'm just not seeing any excitement here on the Republican side. I know you guys are saying, wow, look at all the people that turned up. You guys are the anti-vaccine, anti-mask coronavirus. You should have had bigger numbers. Former Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka finished second. Wah, wah. 14%. And the newcomer to the race, Kendra Qualls, and Lexington Mayor Mike Murphy reaching about 11%. Minnesota Reformer notes Jensen has raised about $1.2 million for his bid for governor, more than double the amount Gazelka has brought in so far. This is more and more looking like the candidate is going to be Jensen. This caucus preference ballot is not binding. Rather, it's a first look at the direction the Republican voters in the state are leaning as election season officially ramps up. The party will officially endorse candidates in the state convention May 13th and 14th. Jensen has put pandemic-related policies front and center in his campaign, touting unproven COVID treatments during appearances and events alongside noted anti-vaxxers, and briefly supported a larger lawsuit to block child COVID vaccinations. At one point, he said he was under investigation by the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice over claims he was spreading misinformation after he claimed Minnesota's COVID death stats were being exaggerated. He said last year he had not been vaccinated, but he had the antibodies from a previous bout of COVID. The CDC still recommends people who have had COVID to get vaccinated. He was also banned from TikTok for breaching its misinformation on COVID-19 guidelines, while his account was restricted on Facebook after his page repeatedly posted content that had been debunked by third-party fact-checkers. In September, he called for civil disobedience over the federal government's COVID vaccine and testing rules, though he has denied he is anti-vaccination. Yeah, shut up, you putz. Jensen has also decried lawlessness as he said science should guide pandemic-related policy decisions. He also backs the expansions of medical marijuana in Minnesota, as well as the expungement of low-level marijuana crimes from criminal records. But his website stopped short of calling for wider decriminalization of the drug as seen in other states. Here's your problem, Republican Party. Let me just, call it as I see it. Your primary, I think, is in June, if I'm not mistaken. Their primary is in June. That means you're all going to have to go crazy train for the next 4 months. You're going to need 4 months of absolute, I think more vaccines are horrible. I think Trump won in 2020. I think the insurrectionists were the nicest fellas ever. They didn't do a thing wrong. You're going to have to do this to knock him off his pedestal. And then you give us a whole bunch of video. That's right. Whoever is going to come out of this is going to have to sit there and say, you know, last week when I was saying vaccines were alien invaders and they were basically trying to turn us all into lizard people, what I meant was choice. I'm not against vaccines. Where did you get that crazy idea? Hey, I never said that we should put up statues in commemoration to the 1-6 insurrectionists. Where did you get that idea? Whoever said I thought Trump should be put on Mount Rushmore and we should all bow down to his greatness and get rid of democracy as a whole and install him as leader for life, where did you ever get that idea? Oh, the debates are going to be delicious. The debates, walls will just trounce these clowns. The debates will be delicious. I don't know how you get out of this. I mean, Jensen, as loon ball as the dude is, he put together the right policy to basically control this from here on out. And I'm going to be able to say this, even if you are Gazelka and you figure out some way to come back and get a 45-42 victory over Jensen, even if you figure that out, you're still going to have to snuggle up to Captain Clown Car over there. Because he controls a lot of this. You know, it's not like Mortensen where you have one guy who's kind of just loony and you kind of can avoid him. Jensen has got the voice of the far right Trumper loons. And you got to appeal to that flock. This is a mess for the Republicans. This is a mess. This is the last thing. You at least wanted to see if Jensen won that it was close. And it was 24 points. He won by a quarter of the votes. Your problem with your Republican Party is that as much as you need to win the suburbs, your party is controlled by fairly sparsely populated counties where conspiracy theories and militia groups are considered to be truth. And as long as that's your case, you look at them, all of them together. I put out the three most, traditional Republicans in there, Gazelka, Benson, and Qualls. They still don't have enough votes to overcome him. They're going to have to snuggle up to that guy. Good luck with all that. One final election note here, and this one not so much a surprise. This was breaking news today. Hennepin County Sheriff David Hutchinson announced on Wednesday morning that he will not seek re-election for this office in November. Hutchinson crashed his county-issued sports utility vehicle in December after drinking at a sheriff's conference in Alexandria. He pled guilty to a misdemeanor drunken driving offense, was sentenced to 2 years of probation. Since the incident, the majority of the Hennepin County Board, other elected officials, and community groups have called for his resignation. Hutchinson said initially he has no plans to step down. But in a statement on Wednesday, the sheriff said, after spending time over the past month having discussions with friends, family, and supporters, I made the difficult decision to not seek re-election for Hennepin County Sheriff in the 2022 election. Early this morning, I informed my staff of my decision to not seek re-election. Hutchinson took office in 2018 after narrowly defeating longtime incumbent Rich Stanek, who recently announced he will seek the Republican nomination for governor. Before becoming sheriff, Hutchinson was a sergeant with the Metro Transit Police. So, I've been pretty clear on my thoughts on Hutch. That I think that, you know, I like Hutch. He's been on the show. I like what he stands for. He's got a problem. And he needs to stop. And I think he still needs to resign and go deal with that. And I will offer you the support and loyalty as you get through your drinking problem and your other mental health issues, by all means. No one here is discounting those problems. Those are very nasty problems. And, you know, helping you get through those is a tantamount priority. But that being said, you're considering the position that you're in, it's probably best for you to step aside and take care of that. And let someone else take over the reins of the Hennepin County Sheriff. I don't know if there would be a special election for something like that. I mean, I don't know if we're too close to the main election, so we just have an interim sheriff until the election happened. But I think it's best for you just to resign. And I still, once again, think there needs to be a full investigation on exactly how some of that evidence got into that car, because I don't believe some of the evidence that showed up in that journalist photographs was there when the vehicle was photographed for the crime scene investigation. The more I think about it, the more I think that was a setup. And I think there should be a full investigation there. But you can't deny the reality of kind of what did happen there. And that's something I think you just need to go deal with. And like I said, all my best. All my best on that. I will help you in any – personally, I would help you on any level because, I still consider you a friend. And that's just – it's just tough. It's just tough. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. More of the show as we wrap up. Native Roots Radio is coming up here at 6 o'clock with Robert Pilot and crew. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. AM 950, of course, we've got, like I said, Native Roots Radio coming up here right after my show. And they are exceptional with Native American news. It's stuff you will not hear everywhere, and I highly encourage you to listen to it. I said not everywhere, anywhere. You won't really hear it anywhere. It truly is a unique show that is just magnificent to have on the air, and an absolute pleasure to be able to lead into it. I will say that it is, their show. Listening to their show has made me more, interested whenever I see a Native American, story that comes through. I want to make sure that we talk about it. And I think one of the ones that's come up lately that is, important here is Leonard Peltier. Leaders of the National Caucus of Native American State Legislators wrote to President Biden on Monday urging him to release Leonard Peltier from prison, warning that the 77-year-old indigenous rights activist is in poor health, deserves to live his final years among his people with dignity. Mr. President, please do what's right, reads the message from New Mexico State Senator Benny Shendo and North Dakota State Representative Ruth Buffalo, the chair and vice chair of the caucus, respectively. The caucus represents 89 Native American state legislators from 21 states. Amid our country's racial reckoning after George Floyd's murder, Native Americans have not yet been included in any promise of federal justice reform. Your clemency towards Mr. Peltier would change that, Shendo and Buffalo wrote. His expected release would sound as a promise to the First Peoples of these lands that we too enjoy America's promise of justice for all. Our communities have suffered enough, he added. Please prioritize equity. Peltier has been in prison for 45 years without any evidence that he committed a crime. Let me make sure we repeat that for all the white folks out there. He has been in prison for 45 years without any evidence that he actually committed a crime. The FBI and U.S. Attorney's General Office charged him in the 1975 murders of two FBI agents during a shootout on a Native American reservation, something Peltier has long said he didn't do. But even when taking responsibility for the killings could have meant parole for him, his trial was riddled with misconduct, and even the U.S. attorney who helped output Peltier in prison decades ago is now pleading with the Biden to grant him clemency because he says federal officers never had evidence that he actually committed the crime. So I'll make sure we understand something. In the 1970s, they put him on trial, and he was put in jail because he was a Native American. Not because he committed the crime, but because he was a Native American. On Friday, Peltier tested positive for COVID-19. He's currently in quarantine. There is a pushback right now in America from uptight racist jackasses who do not want actual history taught. I'll take Christopher Columbus, for example. They don't want the real history that this was a tyrant who basically enslaved people, cut off people's ears, sold 9- and 10-year-old Native girls as sex currency. Yikes. And truly a horrible human being. They just want to believe the Schoolhouse Rock. He came sailing and he landed in America and discovered it. Even though the Native Americans were here. They do not want to change the history that they've been taught. They love the Gone with the Wind version that slaves actually liked being slaves. And the ones that didn't, well, they were the real bad guys. Please. Leonard Peltier didn't do anything wrong. He was put in jail because he was Native American. And to me, it's an even further crime that when you have as long as time has passed, and even the attorney that was charging him said there was no evidence against the guy. That yet this is still a difficult decision. The leadership of our country, whether that's the state of Minnesota or in the Biden administration, still has a long way to go on following through on the promises made to Native Americans in the last election cycles. But you stopped the mine by Ely. That's a good one. That's, you know, let's not do any more damage than we've already done, please. Thank you very much. Freeing Leonard Peltier is not necessarily a fringe idea. It's basically taking a guy that you didn't have any evidence he had done anything wrong, was locked him up because you felt like, well, the Native Americans are getting a little too uppity, so let's take care of that. And now it's time for you to realize the mistake that was made. Get him out of there. Get him home. Let's be done with this. And maybe, just maybe, maybe we actually start teaching a little Native American history in classes. Not the white racist bigot version, which says, Native Americans loved us. I've watched Dances with Wolves. No. Maybe actual history. And maybe, just maybe, you'll realize people like Christopher Columbus, yeah, we probably shouldn't remember them. Not nearly to the extent, we should remember them, but not as heroes. As really the horrible people that they truly were. Just maybe. Winona LaDuke, by the way, coming up on Native Roots Radio. That's coming up in a little bit. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.